episode 187 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 14th, 2018. Mind fuck. Guys, this is episode 187.
On a
murder, death, kill.
It's so hard not. I just hear the rest of it every time.
I was priming the pump there. I was trying to get you to say it. we struggled with not naming this episode something else. We went with Mindfuck, though, and I think it's appropriate. Although maybe it's adult language. So maybe I'll have to put a little asterisk there or some shit.
Oh, are we not supposed to do adult language like we do every week?
No, I don't think we put it in our titles, though.
Whoa, okay.
I hope I've labeled this as explicit.
God, I fucking hope so.
Because, we use potty language sometimes.
A lot.
Yeah.
It's on television, so, I mean, I learned it from there.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's not on us.
I learned HBO as a kid.
I learned from watching Deadwood.
But this episode, we are talking about two very cerebral, crazy shows that can leave some viewers a little bit left behind. They can feel like this show is a little bit too crazy for
me. As if they were leftovers left behind on Earth when the population.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't follow Real Rob super well.
That's right. We're talking about Real Rob, and we're finally doing a Big Bang Theory, guys.
Yeah, well, it's weird that people aren't listening to Kyle's episode-by-episode breakdown talking Rob.
Yeah. These are super heady shows.
Yeah.
We're talking about Westworld, of course, as usual, and Legion, which just wrapped up its second season.
Yes.
And if you thought that first season was crazy, holy moly.
I'm glad. Since we've been talking about Westworld so much, I think it's good to pair Westworld with a nice, straightforward narrative like Legion.
Yeah. It's much, much clearer.
Westworld's training wheels. Right? We are excited to talk about these shows. And, let's go ahead and get into everything here. We're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And we're going to do a quick little plug here. You guys can help support us if you go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. Make a per episode pledge. We appreciate that. And we do bonus exclusive content. So we try to make it worth it for you guys. Also, we are proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater!
Nice. That was pretty good.
That was good. I like it.
I feel good about that.
You guys are, I always thought it was Electric Sweater.
You guys are Electric Sweater.
Yeah.
It sucks, though, because I already recorded the outro, and now you guys are going to make me go and re-record the outro.
No, it should be different every time.
All right, fair enough.
Especially on the Mindfuck episode.
What? Every time we sing a new Electric Sweater, it splits off a new reality.
It's a new reality, yeah.
God.
Well, eventually we'll hit the reality where they're going to put in humans back on TV again,
really,
and I'll be so pissed.
Timeline.
Hey, don't spoil our news segment, because guess what? It's time for our news, Randy.
Oh, well, then I'll start with that, because Grant put this in here especially for me. Jeff Loeb, the head of Marvel TV, who we all love because he's so good at everything, said he believes the Inhumans was, quote, a fun show, and is hopeful the characters will live on in future MCU TV shows.
It simply wasn't. He is wrong.
It was not a fun show.
If that guy can't recognize the garbage they put out,
yep,
then he should be fired.
Yes, he should. For many reasons.
Yes.
Look, I'm sorry that Inhumans did not win its District 1 act competition and advance in UIL theater, but it just didn't, Jeff. Let it go.
Yeah. There will not be Inhumans on TV. I will not be doing a Inhumans in-depth one episode per week.
Here's the
podcast thing,
Randy.
Yeah?
If somehow they manage to resurrect this show,
I know. I'm aware.
You're still obligated.
I'm on the hook.
But I almost want to root for it. No, I don't. I don't.
I thought the saddest thing about this was that he was like, maybe the MCU can still have these characters. Do you mean those characters from your show?
Yeah. No.
Like, they could take the larger concept of those characters and still apply it.
I find it kind of adorable that Loeb thinks he's in any way connected to the MCU.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
They are not paying any attention to what you're doing, and for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, like, does the head pat not feel insulting to Jeff Loeb? Because it seems like it would have to.
You feel like when he and Kevin Feige get in the same room, Kevin's like, hey, Jeff, that's cute what you're doing there on TV.
It's adorable.
Yeah, and he's like, he likes what I'm doing. He called it adorable.
Yeah, this is... It's not even a redheaded stepchild.
No.
Like,
no.
That would imply that they're still in some way related. Like, yeah. These are just, like, two dudes who happen to have the same last name, Jackson, or something.
This is the Power Man 5000 to Rob Zombie's music career.
The MCU TV is the MCU film division's goldfish. That's how much thought goes into it. Yeah, they like it, and they'll be sad if it dies, but they're just going to flush it down the toilet.
Yeah, yeah. Good riddance.
Anyway, Game of Thrones... Apparently, there are three prequels in active development at HBO for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I saw last week they greenlit like the first one. And then all of a sudden, they popped up and like, oh, we're doing two more.
So the writer of Kingsman and Stardust, which is a good pedigree, is working as showrunner on the as-yet-untitled prequel series set in the distant past of Westeros. They shelved one of them, but... There is still another one in development, which I don't remember which one it is.
You know what? I blame Vince Gilligan and Better Call Saul.
When people are like, oh, you can do prequels and they're awesome.
Oh, yeah, but you can't. You need to be Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't be Kingsman. I mean, Kingsman 1 was okay. Kingsman 2, not.
No.
So, no.
But, you know, the thing about Vince Gilligan, when we saw the panel at ATX Fest... They've also kind of lucked into things. Like they talked about, they didn't know, they pitched the show before they knew what it was. That's had no idea.
But that's my whole point.
It's Vince Gilligan. Yeah.
That guy is great.
Yeah.
He can sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves as that
is
movie.
That a Tommy, saying?
It was in Tommy Boy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
That's a good line.
It is.
When's the Tommy Boy prequel coming out?
I think they did it. It was called Black Sheep.
When's the Black Sheep prequel coming out?
Oh, jeez.
Stephen King. I don't know if you guys heard Stephen King. He's this guy who's writing.
Writer.
He's written some books. Yeah. His new book, The Outsider, is already becoming a TV series. It was released on May 22nd. It's in development as a TV show.
Man, people got Stephen King fever now.
Mm-hmm. They do. Well, you're all excited for Castle Rock. You've been talking it up.
Well, it seems kind of good, and it's got Terry O'Quinn, and it's J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot, so, you know, it's got some Lost vibes for me.
So this is being reported that it's been optioned as a 10-episode limited television series, that it is Richard Price from The Wire set to write, and the theme of Jack Bender, who did Lost, yay, and Under the Dome, boo, and Marty Bowen as executive producers. I don't know.
I mean, I've always loved Stephen King books, along with billions of other friggin' people. I'm really glad that there's like a renewed interest in trying to turn these into good shows, because, I mean, there have been adaptations of this. Like, all our childhood, we'd see adaptations of books that were awesome and like watch them and go, how did y'all fuck this up?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's a pretty good track record going right now. I'm kind of glad that there's Catching Fire here.
No, that's a different show. Halt to Catch Fire.
That's over. That was beautiful.
Was that based on a Stephen King book?
It was. Yeah.
It was based on It.
Word Processor of the Gods, actually.
Well played, sir. Fargo Season 4 will not start filming, or will start production until fall 2019. Boo.
Yeah, but there's going to be a Fargo Season 2.
Yeah.
Fargo
Season 4 is...
I tossed this story in there just because I was like, hey, we didn't even know if we were going to get Fargo.
That's true.
And now it sounds like, oh yeah, there's going to be more.
So here's my question. If Fargo Season 4 is starting production in 2019, when is Legion Season 3 starting production?
I bet they're doing it also standard.
Same time?
I think that show has a little bit more legs, or it seems like a show they want to continue investing in while they have that cast.
Oh, Noah Hawley's directing a film this summer.
Jeez.
Directing a film called Pale Blue Dot, an astronaut drama with Natalie Portman and John Hamm.
All right. Cool.
All right. This is Screen Rant at its best. The headline is...
Quit peeking behind the curtain and revealing to people where we got our news.
Netflix orders manned Mars mission and revamped Greek mythology series. First of all, if that's true, then the sub-headline is really kind of... You're not... who cares about a Greek mythology series if you're doing a manned Mars mission? Second of all, they're ordering a manned Mars mission series. That's very important.
Huge difference. Yeah. Like my morning started with someone sending me a news article about how Domino's has dump trucks now that are fixing potholes around the country because like our government's just not doing infrastructure.
Sure.
And so when I saw this, it was like, wow, today escalated. Like Netflix is going to Mars. Domino's is fixing potholes.
It reminds me of the doctor in Arrested Development. Where Lucille Bluth will go there to check on her son who's in the hospital, and they'll be like, he's gone. No, I mean, he left the building. We can't find him. That's not what That's we're going to think you mean that when you say that.
Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock also,
Right.
And maybe that's it. Maybe that's who Netflix's press agent is. Like, yeah, we're launching a manned Mars mission. TV series.
I feel like Screen Rant just nodded and ran out the room. Yeah. Like, Netflix is going to Mars.
Like old school, like they ran into the bank of phone booths to call into their editor, like in a 30s journalism
or
drama,
like in Great News or something.
Yes, but anyway, a show order around the mission to Mars is interesting, and a show around Greek mythology is also interesting. So. I'm curious.
Yeah, yeah.
So the sci-fi show is called Away. It's from Jason Kadams, who did Friday Night Lights and Parenthood.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm super on board.
And also playwright Andrew Hinderaker and War for the Planet of the Apes director Matt Reeves. That's solid. And then Netflix stored up
Tennessee. Felicity alum Matt Reeves.
Oh, yeah. And Batman, soon-to-be Batman director Matt Reeves.
Mm, maybe.
Oh, and great, you're going to like this. 10 episodes of Chaos, K-A-O-S, described as a darkly comic reimagining of Greek mythology from the end of the fucking world creator Charlie Colville.
Ooh.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's supposed to sound good.
Adaptation of the Roger Waters album from... No.
I mean, it's no man Mars mission.
I just saw some... Now I can't remember who it was. I saw some other guy that I follow on Twitter who was saying that he just quit his job as a writer at the Daily Beast because he got a new show.
Yeah, Ira.
Ira.
Yeah. I follow him on Twitter too, and I'm blanking on his actual name. Yeah, I just saw that. That's great. He can't announce
Ira
the show
Madison,
yet, but that's,
right?
Yes, I believe so.
Huh.
And then, in other Noah Hawley news, sorry from earlier, just reminded me, Pale Blue Dot, the only reason I know about that film is because it is delaying work on his potential Doctor Doom.
Oh, interesting.
Which is maybe for the best. I don't know. Everything Fantastic Four related in the big screen seems to be bad. So.
Yeah, that's true. Finally, bit of news that came out just as we were starting to record this. Star Trek Discovery has lost its showrunner. No, this is not a rerun. They've lost another set of showrunners. They lost Aaron Harberts and Gretchen J. Berg. They're officially exiting the series. Alex Kurtzman, who has been a co-executive producer and creator, taking over showrunner. Coverage claims that it was for leadership and operational issues.
Like they weren't getting along with their staff.
It says they became increasingly abusive and hostile to the show's writing staff, which is not what you want in a showrunner.
The phrase increasingly abusive in itself is a problem. Yes. Like you started out at a level we were terming abusive and you went up.
Right.
And hostile is not a word you want to see in the workplace environment. Yeah.
Wow. So... what is going on with Star Trek people behind the scenes? How are they so contradictory to the ideals that the show ultimately needs to express?
And how is the show so good?
Clearly, these are Mirror Universe showrunners.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We should have known when they all had goatees.
Yeah, even the women.
Randy, you have a goatee. Evil Randy!
I have to kill you all now.
Oh, fuck. Guys, so the first show we're going to talk about is Legion. It just wrapped up its second season, and before we get too much into it, I have a little confession for you guys. I didn't finish this season yet. It's so good, but things have been busy.
Yep.
And there are some shows that you can just kind of have on and you can digest while trying to take care of other stuff.
This is not one of those shows.
This no. is not only full attention, but this is full attention with occasional rewinding to go, wait, what was that scene? What did they just say?
Yeah.
How did they film this sequence? Mm-hmm. What are they doing with the editing? This is amazing.
Yeah.
All the details, it's so engrossing that it requires a little bit more of my time, and I thought I was going to be able to just like get through it, but no, it didn't work out. So at some point during this critique, I guess, this discussion of the season, I'm going to disappear.
Yes.
I'm going to be like those guys from the goons from that one episode, and I'm just going to suddenly disappear because David Halley's going to freak out. Yeah. But second season, the first season we all agreed was one of our top ones of last year.
It was definitely my top five.
Yeah.
Or was that the year before?
I think that was last year, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
But this year, I don't know. I feel like they have captured what they did well on that last season, and maybe it's not following as linear a path as that last one. It's more experimental, but it's crazier. It's just really neat.
I enjoyed this season more than season one.
Yeah.
I feel like season one took a little bit to get going for me on the story. I mean, there was a lot of red herrings to set up, and you spent a lot of time in season one kind of dispelling this notion of like, no, you really do have powers.
And what's real. And what's real. We were wondering if it was a period piece.
Yes, yeah. And like, yeah, exactly. Like, what's real, who's real, and slowly figuring out that like, oh, Sid's, which is like, none of these things are explained outright. It takes several episodes to figure out who any of these people are. So it kind of took the whole first season to kind of get all the chess pieces set up.
Yeah.
And then for where season one ended with the orb.
Maybe you guys know better.
Oh, yeah.
But does that feel like it was just kind of a dropped story plot?
Yes. I was going to say, we don't even really know what the orb was.
They were straight up screwing. Like, where they went with season two, when season two first started and I realized like, oh, you guys just threw that out there and aren't going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Like, aren't really going to pick it back
actually,
up.
I was actually annoyed by that. Yeah, I was annoyed by that too.
So it took me a second to get into season two, and I found myself, though, once I finally binge-watched almost the whole season, and then before I had to take a break and then finish it out, I really, really loved how, even though this storyline does loop back on itself several times, like they kind of run down some blind alleys and back and run down some side episodes here and there, I really feel like it drives pretty straight through on kind of a continuous theme about delusions and mental illness and they bring back my favorite thing about Legion, which is not that David was lied to and told he had mental illnesses when he really had superpowers.
Right.
It's that it's not mutually exclusive.
Right.
He might be the most powerful mutant on the planet and be mentally unstable, and this might just be like Professor X and Logan. Like, if he comes off his meds, he's going to kill everyone in a 5-mile radius on accident.
Right.
I think that's funny, though, that you say, like, last season, you couldn't really tell what's real. But this season also, there's a bunch of this where I'm like, I'm not sure if what we're seeing here is part of what we could take for granted as reality, or is this just another dream sequence? Is this a hallucination, a manifestation of David's? Like, we were talking before we started recording about all the announcements going on.
I am not entirely sure that David is not warping the reality of everybody on the show who is around him.
Yeah.
And that...
Yeah.
That and they're unaware?
Even if it's not real, like, you know, I'm not saying that the plots are fictional or that it's all in, you know, David's head, like a dream episode or something. But it wouldn't surprise me if they find out later, like, no, what do you see on the wall behind me? Everything is slight, like, the fact that we've all met David or that he's even in this building means that nobody's seeing things quite correctly. Like, maybe he's got a sphere of influence thing going on everybody because everything is so hyper-designed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, when you're watching the show, you get that sense too. That's the experience of it, is that you feel it's a little like, this is probably a really trippy show to watch on acid or mushrooms.
Oh yeah. Well, like I like the idea that maybe David isn't conscious of using his powers half the time.
Right.
And that maybe he is. Maybe reality looks how he feels, because they get into a thing in season two about do you feel like you deserved to be called mentally ill for that long? And or did you know you were okay and you put yourself here because you're scared of you?
So the thing that...
And so like is even the normal looking mental institution, which wasn't normal looking, like Clocks or whatever the fuck that place was called, is not a normal mental institution. I'm really... There's a part of me that would not be surprised if they completely pulled the rug out from under this entire fucking show.
I think my issue with this and watching the first half is that I didn't love it as much as I love season one. When I was watching that first, I was like, I thought they lost the thread a little bit. I couldn't quite tell what was going on. And it wasn't until sort of the monk became a little more clear as to like what that was that I started falling. And that's not to like episode three that sort of really comes into focus. But then when they get to the big thing with his sister and Lenny, I was all in.
That was so fucked up. That's one of the most gruesome things I've ever seen
on
TV.
Yeah.
This is about where I watched up to.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't mind, I'm going to smoke bomb out of here.
All right.
And you guys can continue and just let me know when I can come back in.
Yeah. Okay.
I do feel like they lost the thread a couple times or looped back. And yeah. I know it was partly in service of the delusion plot or subplot.
Yeah.
But there's a full – they do a full side meander where you basically fight something that is not the big bad of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I enjoyed the switcheroo of it.
Me too, because I thought that was either, the big I thought bad. That was either the monk or Farouk, and it's something and
it's
else.
A, like, you picked some bad timing to attack the X-Mansion, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, remember, I tried to fucking let you go.
Yeah.
I loved it when it happened, but I also realized, like, oh, I've just spent,
there's a side story.
Spent
yeah.
hours on this,
yeah.
God damn it.
I also think it was interesting, and this is a case where I think slowing the ship things down worked, is that they gave us that big reveal about his sister and Lenny,
mm-hmm.
and then they gave us like two episodes before they really dropped back into it, because they gave us the timeline episode, which I think was the best episode of the series.
And you had to take a pause out. That shit hurt so bad. Yeah. That was so fucked up.
And then when they came back to it and he was sort of starting his revenge, even that was sort of like he had a conversation with Farouk, and it wasn't quite in the end game stage of, okay, well, now it's David against Farouk and –
This show I adore as one of my favorite things on television when I can binge watch it.
Yeah, same.
If I pause for any amount of time, like 2 days in between episodes, when I drop back in, I have a moment, whether I'm picking it right back up or not, of going, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Every time. This show, and it's part of how it's constructed. It's how trippy it is and how, like Grant was saying earlier, like you want to watch everything, even the scene transitions. Someone pointed out watching Black Panther that when Killmonger takes the throne, mm-hmm. they do this like camera roll shot.
They tilt it so you show the world's turned upside down. Yeah.
Legion does that
all the time.
All the time.
Yes.
Like, shit's gone sideways. Yeah, it did. Things really rolled sideways.
Yeah. Yes. And all the time. And and then it writes itself and then it goes another way. And
for all their side meanders this season, though, I still kept being infuriated that I would have spent more time on, like, I wanted more Vermillion and Fukuyama. Like, I want to know more about the whole world. Like, there could never, it didn't seem to matter what sidewalk they took. I still wanted some more of something else. I also wanted them to get back to the main plot. Watching this show, this is one of the best things about mental illness I've ever seen, full stop. It's also definitely the best comic book adaptation I've ever seen. It very much still, season two, feels like an X-Men comic.
To some extent, except it feels like a Peter Milligan or Grant Morrison X-Men comic. Like the thing that I think my biggest disappointment with this season, which by the way, I did love this season, but my biggest disappointment was the promise at the end of season one was we were like, oh shit, are they doing the Shi'ar? Are they doing like Arcade and the Danger and Murder World? Like, are they going there? And the answer was no.
Yeah.
There's still a little bit of that embarrassed to be a comic book show that I get from Netflix that bothers me. And I wish that, because even when Morrison did X-Men, they were wearing crazy black leather costumes and that kind of thing. Like, I know that kind of thing can go cheesy, and I'm not saying necessarily that's the way I wanted them to go, but I still feel like they're not quite ready to step wholehearted into the comic book genre. That said, this doesn't have to be a comic book show. I think this is a great just sci-fi show. And it does what the comics can do.
Tonomy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah, that's the guy.
I feel I'm actually angry with his arc over the season. I feel like they really hurt that character.
I agree.
For no gain for me. Like, I did not want to see him be the one who got pawn sacrificed towards some shit.
I agree.
Like, that kept making me mad of, like, no, stop screwing with him. Like, I love that dude. Stop fucking with him.
Yeah, same. I was a little disappointed in his arc as well. But Lenny's arc was great.
Yeah, no, Lenny's arc, realizing partway through the season that I'd never really met Lenny.
Yeah.
Real Lenny.
Yeah. And we still don't, I mean, when she comes back, we still don't really know what her agenda is. She's still fucked up.
I kind of like the idea that she really is just kind of your bad idea train wreck friend.
Yeah.
Who happens to be in a like, world-crushing superhero, like if you drag your shit heel party friend, it's like if you took Jay from Jay and Silent Bob to go fight Galactus with you.
Yeah.
And, like, all his ideas are just going to be the same that they would be if you were in the alley behind a Quickie Mart.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, as soon as Lenny finishes her job in the blind plan.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as her shit's done, she rolls over and gets fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what she wants to do.
That's what she's been wanting to do the whole damn time.
The narrator, a.k.a. John Hamm.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff was fascinating to me because it's building stuff for the world. Like, it's important to see delusions and the patterns and all that kind of thing. Like, that is all playing into the plot. But it also is... It's teaching us about mental illness and terminology.
Yeah. Well, and it does a lovely job of, like, distance removing you from the emotional stakes for just a second. And you kind of have – like, so even as you know I should be paying attention to this and this is going to be on the test later, there's still almost no way at the time to integrate it into it. Like, so that at the end of the season when I realized, like, oh, that's right. There's been second David talking to him since the start. And the subtitles call him Divad.
Yeah.
And then there's a third David that they call DVD. He's That's the super funny. Cynical one.
Yeah.
But realizing, like, it adds to my feeling that all of this is at least slightly colored or inside David's head.
Well, I think what's interesting is that Legion in the comics had multiple personalities. Mm-hmm. That was kind of his thing. And each personality had a different power. Now, that was super comic book. Like, one of the personalities was an Irish terrorist.
Yeah, like, he had to dial H for hero, basically. Like,
One of them had pyrokinetic powers. One of them had telekinetic powers. And different personalities control the powers. But the notion of showing that, oh, yeah, he does have a split personality. There's aspects of David's personality. Yeah. I liked that nod.
Well, and I get the feeling that they still might nod the way they handled his power, his show of power at the end.
Yeah,
I still feel like they may go a direction where they talk about David put himself in a mental home. David constructed an entire thing around him because, like, some little part of his brain is terrified of himself,
right,
and is fracturing and hiding his own powers from himself.
Yeah, I can see that.
And, like, I could see it because by attacking him at the end there, I was sitting there thinking, like, you guys are making the integrated scary power set that you're afraid of.
Yeah.
By attacking him. My main disappointment with the season was I felt like they had a dropped thread. There's a little bit of a twist that we get asked in the question about.
Yeah.
Turns out, is David really the villain? Is future Sid just being fucked around with by Farouk?
Yeah, and our question, we may not get to the question because it's going to be a spoiler for Grant. But the question sort of seems to assume that it's all manipulation, that David is reacting, that Farouk. That's not how I read it.
I feel like Farouk manipulated future Sid.
I do too.
And
but I do feel like he was the devil. You know, the devil mixes lies with truths. Mm-hmm. I feel like he was telling her, look at what he's doing. And that's one of the great things about the actor who plays David. He's amazing at, like,
Stevens is great.
That crazy look he gets.
Yeah.
Like, he can do the sort of, and this is really shut off the multiverse episode, but he can do any version of David. And so when he gets to play the multiple versions, he gets the sort of manic and he gets the, like, the guy fighting it and all that stuff. But when we see him in his, like, manic, angry, crazy mode, he looks like the world-killing threat we're supposed to believe him.
That said, the more interesting thread that I hoped that they would take instead that they didn't was the Sid episode where he keeps having to loop.
Yeah.
They think that they're still trapped in the chattering teeth.
Right.
Attack, but right. No, he's just trying to Sid won't let him leave until he actually figures it out.
Right.
What she says in that episode about broken things and how fuck no, I don't have any love in my heart. I'm gonna save love by being full of pain.
Yeah.
And I came out of that episode really wondering if Sid isn't the villain. Not nobody thinks they're the villain.
Right.
But if out of everybody here, like, David would still make some choices for love and not be able to go through with it. David would have a little kid heart inside. Even the world killer, he's going to have a crisis of conscious moment where he craters for just a second and somebody could get a bullet in him.
Yeah.
Sid won't.
Yeah.
Sid, like, so in the last episode when they were like, or second to last, when Gene Smart's going, look at the look on his face, Farouk might have been making him kill those people, but nobody made him enjoy it. And all I could think was, I've already seen Sid enjoy it.
Yeah.
I already saw Sid flip places with the bully, flip back and go, I don't know, he just started attacking those girls.
Yeah.
Like, Sid's got something fucked up inside her.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Her power set just isn't as scary as David's. But I really wanted the show then to go forward with the idea that David was going to beat Farouk's brain in on the plateau.
Yeah.
And kill him in just one of those, like, okay, well, now I guess we just have to keep an eye on me so that I don't turn into...
Right.
And then Sid's, we got to do what we got to do to protect the worldness.
Yeah.
Is what makes David turn.
Yeah, I do think that's an interesting... because, I feel like...
Sid become the villain by making David the villain.
And I think we may see that in season 3 because I do feel like that's the thing. They got into this self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's where Farouk put his thumb on the scale.
Yeah.
Because Farouk...
Because Farouk leans on future Sid about
it. He does. He does. And the thing is, the thing that makes sense, if you're worried that David is a danger, is you kill Farouk. And then you tell David, you need to destroy yourself because this is the danger. And that you maybe can get David on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of David, especially after all he's been through, that's just like, yeah, I want to end things.
There's a part of David that would lock David away.
Yeah. So instead of...
If you asked.
Instead of basically joining forces with Farouk and putting yourself on the side of a bad guy...
But having Farouk walk in of his own volition and sit there like a free man and look and go... Oh, but we have to come in judgment. You'd be like, you are still fucking Farouk. Fuck you.
That's the thing I was getting. Like, this guy still murdered a woman in the most horrific way possible.
I can't believe that Farouk sitting there free isn't running everyone in that room.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think Farouk is running everything. I don't see a way that he's not. Because we showed him burning out the control unit.
Yeah, and he whispers into the mouse whispers some kind of thing into Sid's ear.
Yeah. So I do think he's running things, but I think he has successfully driven David to a place where David is not seeing it, because it continues to be the chess game between Farouk and David. You don't want that to be over just yet.
No, and
especially not with how
of the
great
guy for Farouk.
Yes,
Jesus.
The guy who plays Farouk, and I had his name here.
Good out of the comic.
It's Navid Nagaban or Navid Nagaban. He's amazing and so sort of oily and yet charming and evil.
But there really is a regalness to him.
Yeah.
And there's a – I mean, he's a despot, but he makes good points of the writing's great. His casting's great. Yeah. Even watching them psychic dance fight to a Farsi version
that was
of
– so great.
Behind Blue Eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, let's talk about the music. Because those covers,
man.
Like, that kind of thing can get annoying. Slow covers of Rock Band.
They do kind of have a shtick now. Like, there's a, you know, similar to, like, Slow It Down, Have a Little Girl Sing It with a tinkly dollhouse or music box piano. Like, that's every horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's definitely, like, a Legion way to slow, like, all right, record a male vocal auto-detuned from a stairwell.
Yeah.
But that said,
I loved it every time.
Works.
Yeah,
oh,
I loved it every time.
And it's a Tori Amos cover.
It's just like in the music in Westworld where you start recognizing, like, oh, wait, that's the White Stripes.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, you know.
Only I don't find the music in Westworld is like hair creep, like
no,
hair raising.
Yeah, it's a
creepy.
Different vibe. It's a different vibe.
But
it is – the music is signifying – in the same way the music in Westworld sort of signifies this is a modern interpretation of a Western world, the music in Legion there's something askew here.
Everything's like slowed down and off tune and like
something's familiar, but it's in a disturbing way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
And that is, the music director for the show, I believe was in the band Tonic.
I think
college.
Yeah. Okay. I met one of the music people last year at ATX Fest and
Noah Hawley has a hand in the music. Some,
yeah, he does. Yeah. I mean, Noah Hawley's got a good sense for that because you can see that from Fargo as well. Anyway, we should bring Grant back in. But this was great. And definitely worth a watch.
I couldn't believe it when Lenny died, though.
Yeah, that was weird.
Son of a bitch! Hey, guys, so what'd you guys think? You like it?
You know what? Just going to listen to the episode.
No! this show? Terrible. No thanks.
Yeah, we should warn you, Grant. There is a spoiler question in the questions that we kind of covered. And it's the first question from Michael Costini. So, Michael Costini, we covered your question in the spoiler section.
Okay, I will try to skim over that one and not acknowledge Michael Costini.
Jeff Russo is the music lead for Legion. Yeah. We got it.
We're talking about how great
him.
The music
the
was.
So
yeah.
Good.
Daniel Russo
is the Karate Kid.
No, yes. Danielle Russo.
Oh.
She's from Lost. She was the crazy French woman.
Daniel LaRusso is the Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Danny
LaRusso. And then the Russo brothers.
And the Russo brothers did the Infinity War. Yeah.
Any other Russos?
Renee Russo
is she's great. I love Renee Russo.
Welcome to the Russo podcast. This is all we're going to talk about.
Russo cubed.
Is there any Russos in Westworld?
Go fish.
Because that's what we're talking about, guys. This might be the best episode of this season.
Oh, I think so too.
Holy
this was a great
smokes.
Episode.
You know what? I should have pulled up ahead of time the name of this episode.
It is called Kiksuya.
Kiksuya.
Kiksuya, which is the name of the ghost tribe who's been – I actually have seen – people were talking about the ghost tribe a little bit, and there was a little bit of that pushback that you see online where people are like, it's kind of racist. Like there are these savages that don't speak, and they're like – and they were talking about how like it was kind of – the ghost tribe was maybe a little problematic. Now, I didn't agree, but
what?
I could see where they were coming from. They were saying the ghost tribe was like – all it was like the boogeyman, and I'm like – this episode was all about.
They showed like a family environment that it was like warm and loving, and to outsiders it seemed aggressive.
Well,
but they were protective.
That's the thing. Prior to this episode,
I keep
what we'd seen of the ghost
articles
tribes.
About Westworld that seemed to think that in this fictional show, these rich people built a museum or some sort of historical document, and not a super racist country club where they could shoot natives.
And that
yes,
was kind of the
fucking
point.
Racist.
That was the point.
I'm sorry. Every time I see a new, like, we have to discuss the implied racism of Shogun World. No, we fucking don't. The whole show's about this.
The point
West
is,
Westworld
yes.
is racist. Shogun World is racist.
Yes.
The Raj is racist.
Yeah.
Everything in the world is racist.
It's
These
by
are rich
design.
People going, what the shit?
Yeah. But what I thought was interesting is this is even an answer to that. Because everyone's like, oh, these ghost tribes, it's just this. They're the version of the dangerous savages. And I'm like, yeah, because that's what they were all designed to be, and they didn't start that way. And now we see this backtrack of Kiksuya, and we see his story, and I thought that was amazing.
So the lead character, the lead actor, is Zahn McClarnon. I hope I'm not butchering his name. You know him from Fargo.
Oh, that's where I know him from.
I
yes.
was going to say, I know you're about to say, I know him from somewhere. It's
yeah,
from Fargo.
It's from Fargo. That is exactly where I know him from.
He was Hansi Dent in the second season of Fargo.
I meant to look this up. Is he one of the hosts that they send to Wu Logan?
Who's Logan?
Man in Black's brother.
Oh.
Or brother-in-law.
Yeah.
When they send him to the party where they freeze everybody...
I don't
like the. I can't tell if he's the guy.
No,
with
the
him.
Business partner. I don't think so.
Yeah, because they've got a very like sharp cheek, like jawline guy
Maybe.
That's with them. But he is one of the hosts that freezes. Like Logan's talking to him, like everybody can't be. And then
I don't feel like
that.
I was paying attention to those people too much. I was more paying attention to him. And
well,
his
show does
his
that all the time. Where like you take somebody's
they hide
war paint makeup off and put them in a suit, and suddenly they're in a whole different part of the park.
Right.
Yeah.
But I loved this episode.
Yeah,
for showing it. I don't want to say it answered questions, but it deepened several narratives that I wanted to know more about.
Yep,
like it raised and kind of like okay, when he runs into Ford at one point in this episode,
and Ford's staging a scene.
Yeah. And but I like Ford's interaction with him because I was wondering the whole time throughout the episode, like, okay, so did Ford give you guys superstition, religion, or is this an accident? Or
right.
Did you slowly figure out that, like, some of this is just management protocols that were kind of badly set? Like, well, we don't update them until they die.
Right.
That means that the he fact could that run he, 10 years.
He was alive that long, and they're like, holy shit.
And at some point on these guys, if they start to realize that death doesn't have to end them, then they can stand back up. I mean, like, we've seen them already stand back up from wounds of like, no, you're not really dead. Stand back up. And so, like, at some point I'm wondering if maybe his program, like, did he ever take a wound that maybe he should have laid down for and he just kept going, or did he really avoid damage that long? But I love the idea that without a full death, that the park might just not notice your code going for that long.
Yeah.
And since nobody really knew what original Arnold was doing except for Ford, there'd be no one to go take that code back out.
Right, right.
Or forget that, like, it would never occur to you that one of Arnold's original bots is still running around unupdated for 10 years. And I love the idea of the Ghost Tribe basically accidentally doing what Arnold was trying to do on purpose.
Yeah.
Simply by being forgotten about and left alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this dude accidentally remembered his own. Well, and he does the same thing Maeve does. Gives himself a new cornerstone.
Yeah. He goes to us. By the way, his name, the character's name is Akacheta. Not Kiksuya, which is the name of the episode. But yeah, he goes back to his wife. And that scene where he kidnaps her, I'm like, this is not going to go well. And then when she remembers him, I was not expecting that.
Right? It's like, oh, we're so trained with this show in particular to think like things are just going to go really messy and violent.
Yeah.
And instead, in this instance, it became this kind of tragic love story.
It's like a viral thing.
Same with Maeve's kid.
Yeah.
You know, I keep thinking about Maeve's kid as well and how that's such a weird Peter Pan-esque, like, arrested development for immortality, like, forever.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. You've near-darked that kid, like. Yeah,
they don't age, and yet if this kid is ever going to mature in some degree, it will be still in a stunted body.
Yeah. Sentient, creepy robot.
Yeah, yeah. Kirsten Dunst in the Vampire, right?
I also think I liked seeing the I thought, oh, well, they're going to be together. And then she gets taken away, and you're like, you want him to chase. But you know it's not going to happen because you know where he winds up.
Well, and seeing it click for him that she's been replaced, but then him kind of rejoining the tribe when he recognizes it in another one of the hosts that, like, you remember – he can tell that, like, I can tell you see something wrong with your son.
Right,
yeah.
And, like, ask her about it. And you can see this religion forming.
But it's also corrupted code.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's corrupted code that is spreading.
Yes.
Which is fascinating.
Watching this along with Legion, with thought viruses and stuff like that is kind of neat. Realizing also this episode we get to see Maeve do something that is, again, a little further along her power set.
Yeah.
Right.
That they pull her aside to figure out how the fuck she has admin because she got so hurt last episode.
She's currently still reaching across.
You can see her eyes flickering. Like when Charlotte finally says something, I was like, well, yeah. I mean, I can't believe. I'm really amazed that, like, y'all are lucky a series of robots haven't stood up and come and seized this room.
That's what I figured was going to happen. Instead, she's just kind of getting this.
She's biding her time.
This final.
Well, and Charlotte says, like, she's been talking to hosts, seeing back through their eyes, understanding what drives them, and then changing it.
Yeah.
And so when they say see through her eyes, I think that line is purely in there just so you know what's going on, because she's kind of riding shotgun in her daughter's mind.
She's being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talking to...
We can't butcher the name.
Well, it's kind of funny that Maeve could wind up being sort of Ghost in the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she doesn't need a body. She can basically influence. She can live in the bodies of any of the hosts at this point. Yeah. It seems like.
Do you think that might be part of it? That she can somehow disperse herself outside of her form at this point?
I don't think that was the plan. I think Maeve, and this goes along with the theory
she's not going to die.
No, I don't think so. But I think Les has been talking all along about how much of this is like Dolores' programming, that kind of thing. Maeve, I think, is, as Les has said before, she's the one who woke up. And this whole thing of like being able to control robots with her mind and spread her thoughts and that kind of thing, that is not in anybody's plan. Maeve is the true wild card in all of this.
I think the last thing Maeve was supposed to do was go infiltrate the mainland.
Yeah.
Everything that she's done since then has been off track.
Yeah.
Dolores, though, is not off track.
Yeah.
Dolores is doing what she was...
She seems to be driving everyone to that one location with the big crafting machine and whatever else is going on.
The Valley Beyond, whatever the Valley Beyond is.
I love that the Indian tribe views her as the Deathbringer, not of Arnold and Ford, but of everyone.
Yeah.
That she's going to get all of the robots killed,
mm-hmm.
too. Like, that she's going to end all of it.
It was so great to me, and you guys already touched on this, but the intertwining of religion and mythology,
yeah.
and how that blends in this particular universe mm-hmm. with the gods that live downstairs and take our souls
yeah.
and our bodies, and he descends. It was very Virgil or...
Yeah, he descends into the underworld. He finds his
Greek
lost
mythology
bride.
Kind
yeah.
of thing. Yeah, he descends down there. The technology, the fact that he gets on an escalator, he's seeing all mm-hmm. these crazy devices of this modern world, all this stuff that's, you know, comfortable for us to see, but it's got to be such a strange, crazy new world. And, yeah.
and he had to have already been pushed. Like, he had to have already been outside of his programming at that point, because I was thinking when he walked up to the valley, this should look like nothing to you.
Yeah, yeah.
It should have mm-hmm. looked well, like anything
also,
to me.
They keep,
like Bernard seeing the extra
right.
house.
And the man in the maze was for the man in black. That wasn't yeah. meant. And so when they begin like incorporating into their religion, it
like,
changes the game.
Ford's reaction of like, yeah. this drawing was supposed to be a yeah. stupid thing that died. Like, why did you get obsessed with it?
Yeah.
He is the same robot that they used to try to lure Logan, like that meets Logan out in the hotel.
Huh.
Wait, so was the maze... which was his sort of impetus for his mind beginning to unlock.
Yeah.
Does the maze hold a very powerful pattern that does seem to do something to the code of the robots?
Does the pattern itself affect the code? That's a good, interesting question.
Is the maze like literally like a QR code?
Is the QR code, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
For fucking with them?
Like, that's
because,
what
like,
it seems.
He shows it to everybody and then...
It seems
one of his
like
guys agrees to basically the scalp tattoo, the
yeah.
inside the scalp tattoo, which we saw in season one.
Yeah,
when they scalp when Man in Black scalps a dude and it's written in the underside of the skin.
Yeah,
and were they doing the scalping and tattooing to a bunch of people?
That's
and then
what it seems
it
like. It seemed like it. I thought Ford was doing that. We all thought Ford had bit those things, and I don't think they did.
I think the robots have been doing it.
The robots have developed their own religion based
and
on Ford.
And they'll put the scalp back on and
yeah.
just let it heal.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's crazy.
I think it's got to go along with the slow work towards being the death cult that's like, no, we can die a bunch of times and get back up. Once you do it enough, then you'll...
Like, I wonder if having that imprinted on their scalp is something they figured out, like, helps keep them unlocked.
Well,
or
he says it is like, and they took it away from him. It's like, well, hide it from them.
Yeah, yeah. It's so crazy because we are two episodes from the end of the season and they have just basically introduced a major new character who's been there the whole time and put a whole spin on everything.
Yeah.
Like, we thought it was all about Dolores and Maeve, and in fact, Akacheta has a story that is running parallel yeah. to all of this.
I like that Maeve may, like, that everybody might think Dolores is awake, but Maeve might accidentally be awake in a plan that wasn't really supposed to. I still yeah. feel like the robots woke up is a bullshit cover that Ford doesn't believe in.
Yeah.
That right. he set into motion. Like, this is a story Ford wrote about robots waking up.
Yeah.
I mean, it still feels...
To hide his immortality because he's going to hijack what Delos wanted to do for himself.
Yeah, so he was able to hack the system of having immortality, mm-hmm. at least within the framework of this...
Yeah, at least like within the training
this fictional,
ground.
Yeah, this fictional world, but not in the real world, it seems. Like,
yeah.
Can his little cube like handle being in a robo body?
He tells Bernard that he'll degrade if he does.
Right.
Yeah.
He has to.
So he hasn't fully
figured Bernard.
It out.
Yeah, he hasn't figured it out yet. He's still yeah. working on that technology.
But how
yeah.
did he incorporate his self into Bernard? Because Bernard's walking around with one mind that supposedly has
yeah,
both of them inside.
Sure.
I think it's duplicate code. I don't actually think it's like it's not his full consciousness. It's a program that is telling Ford what to, it's. Bernard is interpreting it as Ford. But it's just code in his head.
But
Ford is still in the cradle.
Okay.
I think that's essentially.
I thought they blew up the cradle though.
Did
like there was that very distinct scene where that one woman was like, "I'm a bomb," and she blew up.
Yeah.
And that was down in the cradle.
Was that? I don't know.
That's why I was like, I
maybe
like
that's why he had to jump ship to
Ford.
Bernard.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Maybe
he now got a ticking clock on degrading and Bernard. I wonder.
I was kind of assuming that was just like a minute that was part of the cradle. They hadn't blown the whole thing up. But I don't know.
But if he's dormant code, he's not active code within Bernard. Bernard still functions normally.
Yeah.
And he just needs to be put into a host. This show is crazy.
Yeah, the show's crazy. And I'm so excited to see the next two episodes because the finale of season one, there was so many big reveals and changes, and I don't know what they're going to do.
How crazy that this season, what we were anticipating is they are going to unlock it and we are going to see all these other worlds. Yeah. We got two of them.
We did.
Shogun World, and we only got a glimpse of the Raj. And so we don't really have a good idea of what the other three remaining ones are. Mm-hmm. In fact, even when we got a glimpse of the upstairs inside of the Westworld like main labs where they have all the
really only like drone hosts and stuff.
Yeah, right? We only saw Shogun World in addition. Yeah. So who knows what those other three are?
I mean,
I had heard a thing: the Ghost Tribe's made up. I mean, the Ghost Nation is a made up tribe,
right?
They are speaking Lakota Sioux.
Okay. And so is Maeve's daughter,
which are Standing Rock Sioux.
Or is that Maeve that he's talking
to? You're talking about Man in Black's daughter, right?
No, I'm talking about Maeve's daughter because this whole story is being told by Ekacheta to Maeve's daughter, and she sure acts like she understands what he's saying.
Yeah, but it's Maeve. He's talking to Maeve.
So Maeve is listening. Okay.
Maeve is listening the whole
time.
She can hack all languages now.
Her daughter was like on board that whole conversation as well?
Well, he does say like, and you can remember all of it, and I've always tried to protect you. So yeah, she might.
I think her daughter has more awareness as well.
It seemed like he was aware that he was talking through her to Maeve. Oh, okay, yeah. That's the sense I got near the end.
I want to rewatch and see. Like, I wonder when in the conversation, or does he know the whole time?
Yeah,
yeah.
There was something on. I saw the other day that there's only 6,000 or so people who speak that.
Yeah,
and so that they chose a real language.
Yeah.
Was kind of impressive and like stuck with it that nearly this entire episode is in a pretty sparsely spoken Native American language.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
The actor is Lakota Sioux, Standing Rock Sioux.
So
he speaks it.
Man, so good.
Yeah.
Such a good show.
This episode blew me away where this almost could have been its own standalone episode.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, the show is always beautiful, but this show is just – I mean, this episode just like tore my heart out. Like the kidnapping her and then realize when he looks at the woman and says, I found your son, and has his whole journey back and forth in the – like down to the cold storage basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And giving it up and going back and sitting down in the chair crying. I was sitting there going, man, I can't believe how much of a shit I give about these robots.
Yeah, I know.
And how much I don't care about any of the people on this show.
Yeah, the humans all deserve to die.
Did you also see that there was a little featurette for our friend Ali Naqvi?
No.
I saw it posted online, and he shared it as well. But there's a little behind the scenes of the work that he's done. I think he's like an assistant.
We met Ali at ATX Fest 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, and now I don't want to get whatever his proper role is.
Yeah,
correct.
Right,
but it's cool that they show him working on this behind the scenes.
Yep,
and go check that out. He was the guy that joined us for trivia at ATX.
Yeah,
Fest.
Yeah, he was with our near first place team.
Yeah, and we're like. Wait, you work for Westworld? Well, that show hasn't come out yet.
And that was before we remember. He was a little nervous. He was like, yeah, everybody watch the show. Like he was really pushing it. And we were like, oh, we're looking forward to it. We had no idea it was going to become like one of our favorite shows that we covered every week.
I mean, we had some idea because
we were pretty excited for it.
question time. If you guys like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TV Dudes, once a week, Randy will put up a little bit of a post saying, hey, ask us whatever you guys want, and we will try our best to answer some questions.
Grant, I wish people could see all the hand gestures that accompanied that, because it really did make it magical.
I did. I did a bunch of cool hand gestures.
Yeah, you guys couldn't see it. But
it was a lot of too legit to quit, actually. Yeah. That's all I was doing. But just repeatedly.
Hopefully it came through in your voice. Okay. I think it really gave them a sense of excitement.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to act out things, even though this is an audio podcast.
Act as if.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, someday we're going to be on video, and I need to be prepared.
Yes.
With these hand gestures, Randy.
Be prepared, like the Lion King song.
Are you making the Bloods? Oh, shit. Gang signs. Less is flashing gang signs at us.
Less is a Blood.
All right, we want to remind you guys that Michael Gostini asked a dope question for the Legion, and we're skipping it because it has spoilers potential.
Yeah, but we did talk about it.
Yep, asked and answered, counseling.
Jonathan Huffnagel's got our first question here. Awesome TV dudes. Thank you for humoring my movie-related inquiry last week. Those were some good suggestions. I have seen a few, but a few of them I've never heard of, so I shall definitely give them a shot.
Defiantly.
I shall defiantly give them a shot.
His question is, are there any good TV series with a sort of coming-of-age feel to them? Like, if you could capture all the awesomeness of something like The Sandlot that makes us miss our precious childhood and stretch it into an episodic series. Freaks and Geeks.
The Wonder Years.
Freaks and Geeks.
The Goldbergs does that for some people. My So-Called Life. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights can hit on that. For some sad people, 13 Reasons Why.
There's one. It was a web series that got picked up on Hulu for a while called The Yard.
Huh.
That's fucking great. It's basically like if The Sopranos are like a mob type thing, we're entirely like just Schoolyard Recess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah, Everybody Hates Chris is great.
Which is on CW Seed now.
Everything Sucks was a little bit for me like, oh, I remember the 90s, and it felt awkward and uncomfortable watching that, but a little bit relatable.
Yeah, so lots of good options there.
Yeah. Nick Dye says, hey, dudes, I know that Les has recently seen the glory that is the weaponry. Wear Pony episode of Stand Against Evil. It's got me wondering, what are some of the greatest silly monsters you have seen on TV?
The spider at the end of the It miniseries.
Doctor Who owns in this category.
Yeah.
You've got the adipose, the fat monsters from space.
The stretchy face.
She's not really a monster. I mean, I guess she is.
She's kind
last
of a monster.
Human. Yeah,
the and the weird like lizard people who live inside of people's skins in Doctor Who. There's like the like big fat lizard people.
Oh yeah.
They represent sort of space aristocracy.
That hentai monster and Middleman.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 Middleman's got some great silly monsters too. Yeah. Doctor Who and Middleman. That's your wheel.
Zombie flying pike, I think.
Zombie flying pike, yes.
Yeah, that silly, lovable smoke monster. Oh, so silly. From Lost. Jonathan Happy Michael says, hi, dudes. Sense 8 released its 2.5-hour series finale last weekend, which was more or less a good finale for a high-concept series. Sensational? Oh, boy. Get out of here, Les. Go home.
I give it a Sense 8 out of 10.
Are there any canceled Netflix series that you want to have one last hurrah to finish up some loose plot lines?
Terriers should have a last hurrah, like maybe 3-4 season hurrah.
Do you feel like they did? They left some dangling threads though.
There was a deliberate. Did he take him to prison or not? And the answer has been established by the creators. Yeah. So yeah.
It's not a Netflix series, but there's one called Happy Town that I'm rewatching for no reason. That's a one season, very very cliffhanger.
So this is also not a Netflix series. There's a show called Now and Again that was about a John Goodman getting his brain put into like you remember that?
Yeah.
So that ended with like the government on the trail of the guy who had reunited with his family. It was the biggest cliffhanger ending, and then the show got canceled. I would love to see a wrap up to that. It's never going to happen because other than me and Les, nobody remembers the show.
Oh, it was a great show.
It was a great show.
I'm sort of in that camp of
I don't need them resurrecting shows for anything right now for me. There's so many good shows, I don't even have time to get to.
What I would love to see is a series. I'd like a publishing house to just do an imprint of paperback books that wrap series.
You know, Veronica Mars did that.
Yes, like, they exactly doing, like that.
And that fits because Veronica Mars is based in like sort of the Nancy Drew and Pulps, which is also a novel.
Oh, the fact that there's like a basically a YA mystery series of yeah. Veronica Mars is perfect.
It's too bad there's only two of them.
Yeah, but I would love just wrap-up books of series.
You know what else would make a great series of books? Terriers. Terriers would be a great series of books. I actually pitched that to Ted Griffin.
It's basically called Fletch.
It'd be a better TV series, though.
Yes.
Dennis McElwain says, were those the brood that took over people's minds earlier in the season of Legion?
I'm going to say no, because if they were, they'd be sued.
He says, if so, the balls of this show are bigger than my head and brass. Also, Randy, let a film question through last week. You did, Randy?
Hashtag snitches get stitches.
It does say hashtag snitches get stitches.
You know what's coming, Dennis. You least expect it.
Randy,
snitches get stitches.
I was not on last week's episode, mm-hmm. And you talked about a film question?
No.
How dare you?
I was trying to make our listeners happy, and you see what I get.
Did Marvel do something different with the Brood over time, or did they finally settle that lawsuit? That shit is – they are so –
they're aliens. No.
Much the Xenomorph.
They're still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, Brew, I know, made it into the X-Men. Yeah. Like, there's yeah. a little baby – yeah, Brood.
That's
X-Men.
The last we saw of them, but the Brood do show up every now and then. Like, they never acted on it.
They
I feel
are a
like
creature design that is so close to the Geiger Xenomorph.
Oh, Claremont had clearly seen aliens and loved the idea. But the Brood are different enough. They have a queen. They have intelligence.
It's different enough. They have a queen like
yeah,
in the movie.
Yeah, like the movie.
They're intelligent like the movie.
They have speech and they're like more. They're less animal intelligent.
I thought you were about to say, and they spit acid like.
No. They implant people with eggs. Oh, right. They're definitely the aliens, but there's enough differences. They all fly.
They mutate they depending on wheels. What they implant an egg in. So
yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, it's they're very, very close, but I think they're just distant enough that they've never had an issue with it.
But I don't think that's what they were going for in Legion this season.
I don't think so either.
I assume he's talking about the delusion.
Yeah, yeah, the delusion egg, yeah.
I don't think that those were supposed to be brood.
No, I don't think so either. Even sideways look, it's a weird look.
I mean, I definitely get what he's saying. Like they,
yeah, I can see the interpretation for sure, but I do not think that's what they were doing.
Partly because I would hope that they'd go a little different with the creature design, and also because I'm pretty sure they'd get sued. Considering there are currently alien movies, maybe still in production.
Sure, but they're owned by 20th Century Fox.
True.
Yeah.
So can we just call it done? Is this yes. gonna be where the Brood are just finally admitted to be
X-Men versus aliens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Kyle Volte says, so since the world is rapidly rushing toward the future of Fallout, and he says Trump, which we'll just go ahead and say is Trump is leading us to disaster, everyone.
Right, nuclear disaster for sure. Yeah.
What are the three TV series that you will bring into the vault with you?
I know we've addressed this question before, but I can't remember my answer.
It always rotates. I think it depends on the whim.
Yours are Terriers, Cheers, and I don't know the third.
I don't remember either, but it's definitely it's a long running. Like it might even be The Simpsons, because then you get so many episodes.
And I think mine is one of the Law and Orders, Middleman, and. Night Court.
I'll tell you what. You can have all the Law and Orders. You can just have them all.
The Law and Order franchise.
Yeah. You will die before you watch all of them.
Yeah.
Because
and
of the Fallout.
And then Middleman and Night Court.
Yeah. And Grant has Lost.
Lost.
Leftovers?
No.
Doesn't make the cut?
No. Yeah. I love Leftovers. I don't want to rewatch it.
Fair.
Yeah. Lost. I'll probably do Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
And I might go with Breaking Game of Thrones! Game of Thrones, bitches!
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Best friends whenever.
What if you change the calendar, though, and it's only you can only take three one-season shows?
Oh.
There's only so much space on the hard drive.
Three one-season shows?
Or one season of a show. You can take three one-season shows or one season of a show.
Fuck. I mean, Terriers, I
Terriers
guess.
Terriers goes on my list. Yeah.
One season show.
Is it season four? Is that Amsterdam in The Wire?
Yeah, season four of The Wire.
I still love Amsterdam.
Yeah, that
I'm
makes
gonna
a lot
take,
of sense.
I'm going to take the first season of Arrested Development.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
And what's another just single season?
What season of Breaking Bad would you take, or would you not?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't take a single season? I wouldn't break that one apart.
What was I just told? There was something I was like season two. Oh, this is – I'm not sure I would take it, but if I were going to take a season of a show, I'd take a season – I'd take season two of Buffy, which I think was the best that show got, even though its best episodes aren't in that season.
Man, I feel like I should do something like Mythbusters or something that's going to help me survive in this vault. I don't know.
Naked and Afraid?
Yeah. Some sort of man versus wild show.
And you pick the wrong season and he's in a different climate.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not going to help me at all. All right, folks, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. Oh, wait, we got one last question.
We have one very important question.
Alec Miracle says, well, dudes, I couldn't think of a legit question, so I'll simply ask, how was your weekend? And he follows it up with, P.S., permanent record.
Permanent record.
Our weekend.
The weekend was okay.
There's a whole podcast about it.
Yeah, you can listen to our last episode. We released it on Wednesday, I believe.
Yep.
And it was us discussing our adventures at ATX Television Fest. It was a lot of fun.
Yep.
Indeed.
But that's not all, folks. Les conducted a ton of interviews that we are going to be rolling out over the next couple weeks. Please give those a listen. Show some love. Share them with your friends. We appreciate all of your support. And you know what? We're going to go ahead and wrap things up here. But if you guys still need a little bit more TV Dudes, you can, of course, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. And we will be discussing something crazy, Randy. You want to bitch about politics? We can do that.
We might.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. All right, folks. We're done. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.